parents as reformers. January 3, 1875, I was shown that none of us realize the perils that attend us at every step. We have a vigilant foe, and yet we are not awake and in earnest in our efforts to resist the temptations of Satan and to overcome his devices. God has permitted the light of health reform to shine upon us in these last days by walking in the light we may escape many dangers to which we will be exposed. Satan's temptations are powerful upon the human family to lead them to indulge appetite, gratify inclination, and live a life of heedless folly. He presents attractions in a life of personal enjoyment and in seeking to gratify the animal instinct. Licentiousness prevails to an alarming extent and is ruining constitutions for life, and not only this, but the moral powers are sacrificed. Intemperate indulgences are reducing the vital energies of both body and mind. They place the one that is overcome upon the enemy's ground, where Satan can tempt, annoy, and finally control the will at pleasure. Those who have been overcome on the point of appetite and are using tobacco freely are debasing their mental and moral powers and bringing them into servitude to the animal. And when the appetite for spirituous liquor is indulged, the man voluntarily places to his lips the draft which debases below the level of the brute him who was made in the image of God. Reason is paralyzed, the intellect is benumbed, the animal passions are excited, and then follow crimes of the most debasing character. If men would become temperate in all things, if they would touch not, taste not, handle not, spirituous liquors and narcotics, reason would hold the reins of government in her hands and control the animal appetites and passions. In this fast age, the less exciting the food, the better. Temperance in all things and firm denial of appetite is the only path of safety. Satan comes to man as he came to Christ with his overpowering temptations to indulge appetite. He well knows his power to overcome man upon this point. He overcame Adam and Eve in Eden upon appetite, and they lost their blissful home. What accumulated misery and crimes have filled our world in consequence of the fall of Adam. Entire cities have been blotted from the face of the earth because of the debasing crimes and revolting iniquity that made them a blot upon the universe. Indulgence of appetite was the foundation of all their sins. Through appetite, Satan controlled the mind and being. Thousands who might have lived have prematurely passed into their graves, physical and mental and moral wrecks. They had good powers, but they sacrificed all to indulgence of appetite, which led them to lay the reins upon the neck of lust. Our world is a vast hospital. Vicious habits are increasing. It is unpleasant, if not dangerous, to remain in a railroad car or in a crowded room that is not thoroughly ventilated, where the atmosphere is impregnated with the properties of liquor and tobacco. The occupants get up. The habit is more difficult to overcome. Body and mind are in many cases more thoroughly intoxicated with use of tobacco than with spirituous liquors, for it is a more subtle poison. Intemperance is increasing everywhere, notwithstanding the earnest progress made during the past year to stay its progress. I was shown that the giant power of intemperance will not be controlled by any such efforts as have been made. The work of temperance must begin in our families, at our tables. Mothers have an important work to do that they may give to the world through correct discipline and education, children who will be capable of filling almost any position and who can also honor and enjoy the duties of domestic life. The work of the mother is very important and sacred. She should teach her children from the cradle to practice habits of self-denial and self-control. If her time is mostly occupied with the follies of this degenerate age, if dress and parties engage her precious time, her children fail to receive that education which it is essential they should have in order that they may form correct characters. The anxiety of the Christian mother should not be in regard to the external merely, but that her children may have healthy constitutions and good morals. Many mothers who deplore the intemperance which exists everywhere do not look deep enough to see the cause. They are daily preparing a variety of dishes and highly seasoned food which tempt the appetite and encourage overeating. The tables of our American people are generally prepared in a manner to make drunkards. Appetite is the ruling principle with a large class. Whoever will indulge appetite in eating too often and food not of a healthy quality is weakening his power to resist the clamors of appetite and passion in other respects in proportion as he has strengthened the propensities to incorrect habits of eating. Mothers need to be impressed with their obligation to God and to the world to furnish society with children having well-developed characters. Men and women who come upon the stage of action with firm principles will be fitted to stand unsullied amid the moral pollutions of this corrupt age. It is the duty of mothers to improve their golden opportunities to correctly educate their children for usefulness and duty. Their time belongs to their children in a special sense. Precious time should not be devoted to needless work upon garments for display, but should be spent in patiently instructing and carefully teaching their children the necessity of self-denial and self-control. The tables of many professed Christian women are daily set with a variety of dishes which irritate the stomach and produce a feverish condition of the system. Flesh meats constitute the principal article of food upon the tables of some families until their blood is filled with cancerous and scrofulous humors. Their bodies are composed of what they eat, but when suffering and disease come upon them, it is considered an affliction of providence. We repeat, intemperance commences at our tables. The appetite is indulged until its indulgence becomes second nature. By the use of tea and coffee, an appetite is formed for tobacco, and this encourages the appetite for liquors. Many parents, to avoid the task of patiently educating their children to habits of self-denial and teaching them how to make a right use of all the blessings of God, indulge them in eating and drinking whenever they please. Appetite and selfish indulgence, unless positively restrained, grow with the growth and strengthen with the strength. When these children commence life for themselves and take their place in society, they are powerless to resist temptation. Moral impurity and gross iniquity abound everywhere. The temptation to indulge taste and to gratify inclination is not lessened with the increase of years, and youth in general are governed by impulse and are slaves to appetite. In the glutton, the tobacco devotee, the wine bibber, and the inebriate, we see the evil results of defective education. When we hear the sad lamentations of Christian men and women over the terrible evils of intemperance, the question at once arises in the mind. Who have educated the youth and given them their stamp of character? Who have fostered in them the appetites they have acquired? Who have neglected the most solemn responsibility of molding their minds and forming their characters for usefulness in this life and for the society of the heavenly angels in the next? A large class of the human beings we everywhere meet are a living curse to the world. They live for no other purpose than to indulge appetite and passion and to corrupt soul and body by dissolute habits. This is a terrible rebuke to mothers who are the votaries of fashion, who have lived for dress and show, who have neglected to beautify their own minds and to form their own characters after the divine pattern, and who have also neglected the sacred trust committed to them to bring their children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I saw that Satan, through his temptations, is instituting ever-changing fashions and attractive parties and amusements that mothers may be led to devote their God-given probationary time to frivolous matters so that they can have but little opportunity to educate and properly train their children. Our youth want mothers who will teach them from their very cradles to control passion, to deny appetite, and to overcome selfishness. They need line upon line and precept upon precept, here a little and there a little. Direction was given to the Hebrews how to train their children to avoid the idolatry and wickedness of the heathen nations. Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes, and ye shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. We have an earnest desire that women shall fill the position which God originally designed as her husband's equal. We so much need mothers who are mothers not merely in name, but in every sense that the word implies. We may safely say that the dignity and importance of woman's mission and distinctive duties are of a more sacred and holy character than the duties of man. There are regulations as to women's rights and duties in regard to voting. Many are in no way disciplined to understand the bearing of important questions. They have lived lives of present gratification because it was the fashion. Women who might develop good intellects and have true moral worth are now mere slaves to fashion. They have not breadth of thought nor cultivated intellect. They can talk understandingly of the latest fashions, the styles of dress, this or that party, or delightful balls. Such women are not prepared to intelligently take a prominent position in political matters. They are mere creatures of fashion and circumstance. Let this order of things be changed. Let women realize the sacredness of her work, and in the strength and fear of God, take up her life mission. Let her educate her children for usefulness in this world and for a fitness for the better world. We address Christian mothers. We entreat that you feel your responsibility as mothers and that you live not to please yourselves but to glorify God. Christ pleased not himself but took upon him the form of a servant. He left the royal courts and condescended to clothe his divinity with humanity, that by his condescension and his example of self-sacrifice he might teach how we can become elevated to the position of sons and daughters of the royal family, children of the heavenly King. But what are the conditions of these sacred, elevated blessings? Come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Christ humbled himself from the highest authority, from the position of one equal with God, to the lowest place, that of a servant. His home was in Nazareth, which was proverbial for its wickedness. His parents were among the lowly poor. His trade was that of a carpenter, and he labored with his hands to do his part in sustaining the family. For 30 years he was subject to his parents. Here the life of Christ points us to our duty to be diligent in labor and to provide for and to train the weak and the ignorant. In his lessons of instruction to his disciples, Jesus taught them that his kingdom was not a worldly kingdom where all were striving for the highest position. Woman is to fill a more sacred and elevated position in the family than the king upon his throne. Her great work is to make her children a living example which she would wish her children to copy. By precept as well as example, she is to store their minds with useful knowledge and lead them to self-sacrificing labor for the good of others. The great stimulus to the toiling, burdened mother should be that every child who is trained aright and who has the inward adorning, the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, will have a fitness for heaven and will shine in the courts of the Lord. How few see anything attractive in the true humility of Christ. His humility did not consist in a low estimate of his own character and qualifications, but in his humbling himself to fallen humanity in order to raise them up with him to a higher life. Worldlings try to exalt themselves in the position of those above them or to become superior to them. But Jesus, the Son of God, humbled himself to elevate man, and the true followers of Christ will seek to meet men where they are in order to elevate them. Will mothers of this generation feel the sacredness of their mission and not try to vie with their wealthy neighbors in appearances, but seek to excel them in faithfully performing the work of instructing their children for the better life? If children and youth were trained and educated to habits of self-denial and self-control, if they were taught that they eat to live instead of living to eat, there would be less disease and less moral corruption. There would be little necessity for temperance crusades, which amount to so little, if in the youth who form and fashion society, right principles in regard to temperance could be implanted. They would then have moral worth and moral integrity to resist in the strength of Jesus the pollutions of these last days. It is a most difficult matter to unlearn the habits which have been indulged through life and have educated the appetite. The demon of intemperance is not easily conquered. It is of giant strength and hard to overcome. But let parents begin a crusade against intemperance at their own firesides, in their families, in the principles they teach their children, to follow from their very infancy, that they may hope for success. It will pay you, mothers, to use the precious hours which are given you of God in forming, developing, and training the characters of your children, and in teaching them to strictly adhere to the principles of temperance in eating and drinking. parents may have transmitted to their children tendencies to appetite and passion, which will make more difficult the work of educating and training these children to be strictly temperate and to have pure and virtuous habits. If the appetite for unhealthy food and for stimulants and narcotics has been transmitted to them as a legacy from their parents, what a fearful, solemn responsibility rests upon the parents to counteract the evil tendencies which they have given to their children. How earnestly and diligently should the parents work to do their duty in faith and hope to their unfortunate offspring. Parents should make it their first business to understand the laws of life and health, that nothing shall be done by them in the preparation of food or through any other habits which will develop wrong tendencies in their children. How carefully should mothers study to prepare their tables with the most simple, healthful food, that the digestive organs may not be weakened, the nervous forces unbalanced, and the instruction which they should give their children counteracted by the food placed before them. This food either weakens or strengthens the organs of the stomach and has much to do in controlling the physical and moral health of the children, who are God's blood-bought property. What a sacred trust is committed to parents to guard the physical and moral constitutions of their children so that the nervous system may be well balanced and the soul not be endangered. Those who indulge the appetite of their children and do not control their passions will see the terrible mistake they have made in the tobacco-loving, liquor-drinking slave whose senses are benumbed and whose lips utter falsehoods and profanity. When parents and children meet at the final reckoning, what a scene will be presented. Thousands of children who have been slaves to appetite and debasing vice, whose lives are moral wrecks, will stand face to face with the parents who made them what they are. Who but the parents must bear this fearful responsibility? Did the Lord make these youth corrupt? Oh no. He made them in His image, a little lower than the angels. Who then has done the fearful work of forming the life character? Who changed their character so that they do not bear the impress of God and must be forever separated from His presence as too pure to have any place with the pure angels in a holy heaven? Were the sins of the parents transmitted to the children in perverted appetites and passions? And was the work completed by the pleasure-loving mother in neglecting to properly train them according to the pattern given her? All these mothers will pass in review before God just as surely as they exist. Satan is ready to do his work and to present temptations which they have no will or moral power to resist. Our people are constantly retrograding upon health reform. Satan sees that he cannot have such a controlling power over them as he could if appetite were indulged. Under the influence of unhealthful food, the conscience becomes stupefied, the mind becomes darkened, and its susceptibility to impressions is blunted. But because violated conscience is benumbed and becomes insensible, the guilt of the transgressor is not lessened. Satan is corrupting minds and destroying souls through his subtle temptation. Will our people see and feel the sin of indulging perverted appetites? Will they discard tea, coffee, flesh meats, and all stimulating food and devote the means expended for these hurtful indulgences to spreading the truth? These stimulants do only harm. And yet we see that a large number of those who profess to be Christians are using tobacco. These very men will deplore the evil of intemperance, and while speaking against the use of liquors, will inject the juice of tobacco. While a healthy state of mind depends upon the normal condition of the vital forces, what care should be exercised that neither stimulants nor narcotics be used? Tobacco is a slow, insidious poison, and its effects are more difficult to cleanse from the system than those of liquor. What power can the tobacco devotee have to stay the progress of intemperance? There must be a revolution in our world upon the subject of tobacco before the axe is laid at the root of the tree. We press the subject still closer. Tea and coffee are fostering the appetite, which is developing for stronger stimulants as tobacco and liquor. And we come still closer home to the daily meals. The table spread in Christian households. Is temperance practiced in all things? Are the reforms which are essential to health and happiness carried out there? Every true Christian will have control of his appetite and passion. Unless he is free from the bondage and slavery of appetite, he cannot be a true obedient servant of Christ. It is the indulgence of appetite and passion which makes the truth of none effect upon the heart. It is impossible for the spirit and power of the truth to sanctify a man, soul, body, and spirit, when he is controlled by appetite and passion. Cannot come down. I am doing a great work, says Nehemiah, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? I was shown in January 3, 1875, that God's people should not for one moment relax their watchfulness or their vigilance. Satan is upon our track. He is determined to overcome God's commandment-keeping people with his temptations. If we give no place to him but resist his devices, steadfast in the faith, we shall have strength to depart from all iniquity. Those who keep the commandments of God will be a power in the land if they live up to their light and privileges. They may be patterns of piety, holy in heart and in conversation. We shall not have ease that we may cease watchfulness in prayer. As the time draws near for Christ to be revealed in the clouds of heaven, Satan's temptations will be brought to bear with greater power upon those who keep God's commandments, for he knows that his time is short. The work of Satan will be carried on through agents. Ministers who hate the law of God will employ any means to lead souls from their loyalty to God. Our bitterest foes will be among the first-day Adventists. Their hearts are fully determined to make war against those who keep the commandments of God and have the faith of Jesus. This class feels that it is a virtue to talk right and act out the most bitter hatred against us. We need not look for fair dealing or for justice at their hands. Many of them are inspired by Satan with insane madness against those who are keeping the commandments of God. We shall be maligned and misrepresented. All our motives and actions will be misjudged, and our characters will be attacked. The wrath of the dragon will be manifested in this manner, but I saw that we should not be in the least discouraged. Our strength is in Jesus, our advocate. If in humility we trust in God and hold fast to his promises, he will give us grace and heavenly wisdom to withstand all the wiles of Satan and to come off victors. In my recent view, I saw that it will not increase our influence or bring us into favor with God to retaliate or come down from our great work to their level in meeting their slanders. There are those who will resort to any species of deception and gross falsehood to gain their object and deceive souls and to cast stigma upon the law of God and those who obey it. They will repeat the most inconsistent and vile falsehoods over and over until they make themselves believe that they are the truth. These are the strongest arguments they have to use against the Sabbath as a fourth commandment. We should not allow our feelings to control us and divorce us from the work of warning the world. The case of Nehemiah was presented before me. He was engaged in building the walls of Jerusalem, and the enemies of God were determined that the walls should not be built. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. In this case, a spirit of hatred and opposition to the Hebrews formed a bond of union and created a mutual sympathy among different bodies of men who might otherwise have warred with one another. This well illustrates what we frequently witness in our day in the existing union of men of different denominations to oppose present truth. Men whose only bond seems to be that which is dragonic in its nature, manifesting bitterness and hatred against the remnant who keep the commandments of God. This is especially seen in the first day, no day, and all days alike Adventists who seem to be famous for hating and slandering one another when they can spare time from their efforts to misrepresent, slander, and every way abuse Seventh-day Adventists. Nevertheless, we have made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against him day and night because of them. We are in constant danger of becoming self-sufficient, relying upon our own wisdom and not making God our strength. Nothing disturbs Satan so much as our knowledge of his devices. If we feel our dangers, we shall feel the need of prayer as did Nehemiah, and like him, we shall obtain that sure defense that will give us security in peril. If we are careless and indifferent, we shall surely be overcome by Satan's devices. We must be vigilant. While like Nehemiah, we resort to prayer, taking all our perplexities and burdens to God, we should not feel that we have nothing to do. We are to watch as well as pray. We should watch the work of our adversaries, lest they gain advantage in deceiving souls. We should, in the wisdom of Christ, make efforts to defeat their purposes, while at the same time we do not suffer them to call us from our great work. Truth is stronger than error. Righteousness will prevail over wrong. The Lord's people are seeking to heal the breach which has been made in the law of God. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the store of paths to dwell in. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasures, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it. This disturbs the enemies of our faith, and every means is employed to hinder us in our work. And yet the broken down wall is going steadily up. The world is being warned, and many are turning away from trampling under their feet the Sabbath of Jehovah. God is in this work, and man cannot stop it. Angels of God are working with the efforts of his faithful servants, and the work steadily advances. We shall meet with opposition of every description, as did the builders of the walls of Jerusalem. But if we watch and pray and work as they did, God will fight our battles for us and give us precious victories. Nehemiah clave to the Lord and departed not from following him, but kept his commandments which the Lord commanded Moses, and the Lord was with him. Messengers were sent repeatedly soliciting a conference with Nehemiah, but he refused to meet them. Bold threats were made of what they proposed to do, and messengers were sent to harangue the people engaged in the work of building. These presented flattering inducements and promised the builders freedom from restraint and wonderful privileges if they would unite their interests with them and cease their work of building. But the people were commanded not to engage in controversy with their enemies and to answer them not a word, that no advantage of words might be given them. Threatenings and ridicule were resorted to. They said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Sanballat was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. Nehemiah prayed, hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease, whilst I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand. We shall receive the most fierce opposition from the Adventists who oppose the law of God. But like the builders of the wall of Jerusalem, we should not be diverted and hindered from our work by reports, by messengers desiring discussion or controversy, or by intimidating threats, the publication of falsehoods, or any of the devices that Satan may instigate. Our answer should be, we are engaged in a great work and we cannot come down. We shall sometimes be perplexed to know what course we should pursue to preserve the honor of the cause of God and to vindicate His truth. The course of Nehemiah should have a strong bearing upon our minds as to the manner of meeting this kind of opponent. We should take all these things to the Lord in prayer, as Nehemiah made his supplication to God while his own spirit was humbled. He clung to God with unwavering faith. This is the course that we should pursue. Time is too precious to be devoted by the servants of God to vindicating their character, blackened by those who hate the Sabbath of the Lord. We should move forward with unwavering confidence, believing that God will give His truth great and precious victory. In humility, meekness, and purity of life, relying upon Jesus, we should carry a convincing power with us that we have the truth. We do not understand, as is our privilege, the faith and confidence that we may have in God and the great blessings which faith will give us. An important work is before us. We are to obtain a moral fitness for heaven. Our words and our example are to tell upon the world. Angels of God are actively engaged in ministering to the children of God. Precious promises are upon record on condition of our obedience to God's requirements. Heaven is full of the richest blessings, all waiting to be communicated to us. If we feel our need and come to God in sincerity and in earnest faith, we shall be brought into close connection with heaven and shall be channels of light to the world. The warning needs to be often sounded: be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. End of Testimonies for the Church, Volume 3.